Alright. So, what's different about this new album as opposed to all the other ones? How is it a progression?
I think one of the biggest differences is that we recorded it in our own studio. That made a very big difference to me. It's probably one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Okay, now, the studio, this is like right in your home or what? And what do you have to do to build one of these things? It takes years, it costs millions of pounds. What's the story behind it?
Yeah, it costs a lot of money. You've got to find the right place.
You can start again.
I'd like to, please, yeah.
And, you know, if you want, like, to say things, you know, when I built the studio, it cost me a lot of money, and it was like, you know, you could, like, bring up the end of my question, the beginning of your response.
Do you want me to do that?
Yeah, I sort of would prefer, because it makes it easier for us to cut a piece out of it.
I see. Okay, I'll try.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to do it every time, but if you think of it,
that
would be good. And, in fact, I might ask you to say things again if I see that it's coming out in a way that might not work that well on TV. It's just, like, things that we have to do.
Great. Okay. Well, that sort of helps me, really.
Don't worry about it. Just talk. It'll be good.
Thanks.
All right. So we were talking about the studio, right? And you're going to tell me, like, what it was like to build it and what you wanted to do.
Yeah. One of the main reasons for wanting to build our own studio was the amount of money that it was costing in a commercial studio per hour. And when you work experimentally, it actually becomes prohibitive when it's costing that amount of money, plus the distractions. So you've got to find a place, and you've got to get the best equipment in there that you can afford, because obviously it's very expensive stuff.
So I was looking to see, like, was that a wig, you know, was it Memorex, what was it, because, you know, because sometimes you see, like...
You're ready
anytime,
yeah.
So this studio is jinxed now, because it's fundraising and everything stops. So, I mean, so you have the studio and everything, and it was, helped make it easier. But what else, like, what about the subject matter? Do you feel like these songs are about different things than songs in the previous album?
Yes, I think the last album was quite an intense album. I think it was about emotion, and there were a lot of things that I wanted to say that I wasn't happy with. I was feeling mankind to be cruel, negative, and I think I expressed that in a lot of the songs. With this album, there was a completely different energy. I moved from the city to the country. I was surrounded by elemental forces, which I really feel feature on this album, and I was feeling really happy and positive and considering mankind to be much better than on the last album. So I think it's got a more positive energy.
That's kind of weird that you say that, because especially on the first side, all the songs are so pessimistic. These songs about people who just cannot communicate.
On this album?
Yeah.
But I think it's actually finding a way for them to communicate. If they can't, the positive side is that they find a way to, and if they don't, then there's the hope that they can.
Okay, so then running up that hill is just the beginning of a whole cycle.
How do you mean?
Well, because, I mean, that is like a really pessimistic thing. I mean, two people wanting to switch places like that. You know, the singer's just saying, you know, if you could feel like what I feel now, then what, right?
But why is it pessimistic, though? Why is it not positive to want to experience what the other person feels? For me, it's a positive thing. It's saying that they can get rid of the problems, or they want to. They care enough about each other to want to do that.
Okay, great. So, on this side, then, basically, so we got, you're optimistic. What caused you to write lyrics that, like, you never understood me, you never really tried? Is this a personal experience?
I think everyone at some time feels misunderstood. But I can't think of any song that I would say was truly autobiographical. There's something of me in every song, in that I'm expressing something I'm hoping is interesting, but I don't think they're truly autobiographical comments in any way.
Okay. I have written here, what's cloud busting about?
Well, cloud busting was inspired by a book that I found on a shelf about 9 years ago. It's out of print now, written by a guy called Peter Reich, and it's called A Book of Dreams. And it's a very unusual, beautiful book written by this man through the eyes of himself when he was a child, looking at his father and the relationship between them. Very special relationship. His father meant so much to him. His father was a psychoanalyst, very respected, but he also had a machine that could make it rain. And the two of them would go out together and they would make it rain. And in the book there was such a sense of magic that in a way the rain was almost a presence of his father. Unfortunately, it's a very sad book in that the peak of it is where his father is arrested, taken away from him because of his beliefs he's considered a threat. And it's how the child has to cope from that point onwards without his father. And the song is really using the rain as something that reminds the son of his father. Every time it rains, instead of it being sad and lonely, it's a very happy moment for him. It's like his father is with him again.
Yes, as far as Wilhelm Reich, right. Good. I mean, in the video, was it easy for you to portray a child?
I think it's something I obviously worried about. When you're not a child, there are lots of things that could be a problem, like I could look old and not young. And we were also, excuse me, trying to take away the feminine edge, so that in a way I could be a tomboy rather than a little girl, trying to keep the thing as innocent as possible. And I think rather than what being that worried about playing a child, I was just worried about the whole process of acting, because it's something I've not really done in a true sense. I've performed in lots of ways, but not really acted. And it was something that I was wary of. And I was actually surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Well, that's what everyone around the office is saying, for instance, like, saying, well, she should play Tess of the D'Urbervilles. I mean, this is the most like an English classic. I mean, is this something that you've are really considering doing now?
Acting?
Yeah, acting more.
It's nothing that has ever really been a strong desire for me. I mean, never at any point in my life have I really wanted to be an actress. But if there was something offered that was interesting enough, I would certainly want to do it, yes.
Okay, good. Let's get back to the video then. How did you get Donald Sutherland to be in it?
Really lucky. The brief, really, from the start was that I wanted a great actor to play the father. I wanted it to be a piece of film rather than a video promotional clip. I wanted it to be a short piece of film that would hopefully do justice to the original book and let people understand the story that couldn't really be explained in the song. So we wanted a great actor. We thought of Donald Sutherland and thought, well, you know, chances are we won't get him, but why not try? So we found a contact and explained the story and sent the script to him. And he was interested in doing it and just happened to have the day's free when we were shooting. So, pretty incredible, really.
What was he like?
Fantastic. Really professional, really patient, and an incredible help to me. In my debut acting role, I had a pretty good actor opposite me, and he was so encouraging and made it so easy for me. I mean, whenever we were acting, he was my father. I just had to react to him like a child. He made it very easy.
Great. Who directed the video and where was it shot? The setting is really beautiful.
It is a beautiful place. It's the Vale of the White Horse in England. And the director was Julian Doyle.
And, you know, tell us more about Julian Doyle.
Julian Doyle?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so we're going to talk about Julian Doyle and where he's from and what he's done and how you met him.
I'm a big fan of Terry Gilliam. I don't know if you know him. Superb director. And I was interested in working with him, and he put me in touch with Julian, who works with Terry on his movies. He's the cameraman, and this was really his first role as director. Terry was involved with the storyboard as well, and this is how I met Julian. We spent a lot of time on this video, and what was nice was the way that everyone became so concerned with the story, and also concerned with giving justice to it. You know, everyone wanted it to be something special.
Why is it set in the 50s?
Because of the book. That's the time that it happened to the boy. He was about 12.
Okay, and this question is today because of the book of dreams that's based on. Okay.
Yeah. It's because a book of dreams that it's based on was actually at that time in the 50s that his father was taken from him. He was about 12.
And that's really it, and just like the exact time from the book.
Yes, I think also it made it more interesting. It's not totally accurate to the 50s, and I think that in itself is important. We wanted to create a sense of no certain time. I think it's more interesting in a way when it could be any time. But also by not making it contemporary time, you get a big sense of nostalgia of something that has happened in the past. So I think visually it was a very good combination.
How did you make that machine?
Well, the book gave very little details of what the actual machine looked like, but from what I could gather, the reality of the machine wouldn't look right on screen. It's got to be exaggerated. So it was trying to design something that would look powerful and possible of doing it, but that wouldn't be comical, because we didn't want people to laugh at it. We wanted people to be astounded by the machine. So it was really designing something that was a cross between an AK-AK gun and a pipe organ. I just felt that it had to have these huge funnels that would reach to the sky and could be moved around, and the whole thing should be rotatable. And so we worked with some designers who'd worked on The Alien, and I think it looked pretty good.
No, it looks great. Is this the first video where you're not dancing?
No, but it's quite a departure. I have done a couple of others that, again, we were trying to treat like pieces of film, but we were using lip sync or something like that, and we were working on video as well, which makes it quite different.
How come there are two running up that hill clips? Well, you should probably tell us what they are, but why is that? Did you actually make them both and authorize them both?
No, I think what's happened here is you're seeing a TV performance that we did in England to promote the single. And I don't do very many TV performances. It concerns me that to try and do everything you can and put as much effort into it, and sometimes it's very difficult to make things look good in TV situations. But that was a live TV, and we presented it that way for the British audience. It wasn't my intention that clip would be shown anywhere else at all, apart from that one live performance in England. And it was something that the record company wanted to use here, and so that's why you're seeing that. From my point of view, the expression visually that goes with that song is the film that we made that is the dance video. And the other one is really, for me, just a one-off TV.
Well, who are you dancing with in the dance version, and who directed that one? Was that Shulani?
The director of that was a guy called David Garfath, and the dancer was a guy called Michael Hairview, who we auditioned. We wanted to do a piece of dance, a serious piece of dance. Over the last couple of years, or the videos I've seen, dance has become a very exploited thing and hasn't really been treated seriously. It's been used to sort of be accessories around the person who's starring in the film. And we thought it would be nice to do almost a classical piece of dance, filmed as well as possible, because it's very rarely filmed well dance. In fact, the only well-filmed piece of dance I think I've ever seen was Twyla Felt's Catherine Wheel. And I think that's because she was so involved in it that it was so good. So that's what we wanted to do, a nice serious piece of dance, simple, well-filmed, and give dance a chance in a real way in this pop world.
So I like the masks. I like the scenes with the masks. How'd you think those up?
Well, that was very much a coincidence, where the director was talking about these masks, and I had a film on video that we taped that had a section where people were wearing these photographic masks, and we just felt that it was a really interesting idea, this crowd that would suddenly sort of rush in through the dance sequence, and the idea of the crowd being the force of either the man or the woman, and so the faces change from the man to the woman, and then the idea of drowning in yourself, and just sort of those kind of plays and things.
Okay, good. Now, everyone says side two of the album is all about someone drowning. Is that true?
I'd say it was more about someone not drowning. They're in the water for the night.
Okay, that's the thing. You should start by saying, even though a lot of people say side two is about drowning, it's more about not drowning.
I think even though a lot of people say that the side is about someone drowning, it's much more about someone who's not drowning and how they're there for the night in the water, being visited by their past, present and future to keep them awake, to keep them going through until the morning, until there's hope.
All right, is there going to be a whole video film based on that side?
That's something that I like the idea of trying, but it's all talk and no more. And talk to action is a big leap, so I don't know.
Okay. This is like scattering around a bit, but why not? Who's the band in the TV performance? Like, who are the members of it? Is that the band you perform with, or those people play on the album?
When you say the TV performance, you mean Running Up That Hill. A lot of them are musicians that were on the album, and others were people that we had to call in because, for instance, the Fairlight part, I played on the record, but visually it just looked better if I was singing, so we had someone on the keyboard. And a few of them were in the band when we toured in 79.
All right. I like that part of Bow and Arrow at the end, by the way.
Do you?
It's really striking. Is this thing you thought of at the moment?
It's a kind of thread that's been running through that song. The cover of the single is using a bow and arrow. In the video, at the end, there's a section where there's an invisible bow. So it was just a kind of theme that kept occurring, and I thought it would be fun to live television with an audience, you know, just taking out a bow and arrow. Makes people go for a minute, and maybe that's a good thing.
Uh-huh. That was so good. Have you ever toured?
Yes.
Will you ever tour again? Or if you ever come to America and play a tour, play various places?
I'd really like to tour again. And the one tour I did in 79, England and Europe, was really exhausting. We rehearsed it for maybe 6 months. By the time we got round to the first night, I was really looking forward to having an audience out there so we could see how they would react, see if they liked it. It's really a lot of fun and in many ways very educational for me as a performer as well as a person. But it's the commitment. It's so much time and effort. And I just don't know if it's something I want to launch into. It'd probably be a year out at least.
Okay. So
a lot.
They show it a lot.
Oh, that's interesting. So would you say that the dance one has ever been shown?
I don't know.
Great. That'd be really interesting.
Did you start out dancing before you became a singer?
No, when I left school at I was about 16, 17, and I actually left school with the decision that I wanted to throw myself into the world of music and go forth and get into it, and I felt that I had to work in order to find a way in. And I took up dance, really, to sort of fill up the day, give me some kind of discipline and a way to get to meet people and become independent.
Really? Does it take a lot of time? Do you work out a lot? What has it done for you?
It did an incredible amount, especially when I started back then. I had a recording contract, but I didn't know when I was going to be making the first album, and I had in a way, Time to Kill and Use until that point. And I had very little experience, certainly of the business, I mean, coming straight from school. And I had almost two clear years of going to the dance school, learning to dance, getting more control over my body and writing. Just using the time generally as the kind of foundation for what was to happen next when the album was released and the single was very successful. I think without having used the time like that, things could have been very different for me. I was very lucky.
Do you choreograph all the clips then? Like sat in your lab and suspended in Gaffa and Wuthering Heights, those are all your choreography?
Yes, and those ones that you mentioned particularly. I worked with a choreographer when we toured, and I was using two dancers, and he was involved with integrating the routines between the three of us. And on the Running Up That Hill dance performance, I worked with a lady choreographer called Diane Gray, and I really enjoyed that. It was really exciting to work with someone else and get that feedback, and her experience with my sort of non-technical ideas were a very good combination. We had a lot of fun.
Where did you shoot some of these? Like suspended in Gaffa, it's like in a barn or something. Are these all sound stages, or did you use locations?
Yes, they're all stages and extremely good designers.
Okay. I want to go back to when you were signed and everything like that, so back in time a bit. And do you feel that you started very young and recording very young, had now met at a pretty young age, right? And do you feel that it was an advantage to you or a disadvantage that that happened to you so early?
I think it's been a big advantage. I am doing what I want to do. I really want to be involved in this business. I don't think, if I hadn't started so young, I probably wouldn't have my own recording studio now. I probably wouldn't have the kind of control that I have over the situation at such an early age. So I think it's been really beneficial for me.
What role did David Gilmour have in getting you signed?
I was about 15. My family thought it would be interesting to see if we could get some of my songs published. I'd written loads of songs. I just used to write one every day or something. And so a friend of the family who knew Dave Gilmour, we made a contact for him to come and hear some of my songs. At that time, he was sort of scouting for talent, looking for bands that he could produce or become involved in or just encourage. And I became one of the people that he was visiting. I think he liked the song sufficiently to feel that it was worth him actually putting up money for me to go in and professionally record the tracks, because all my demos were just piano vocals, and I had, say, like 50 songs that were all piano vocals. And he felt, quite rightly, that the record company would relate to the music much in a more real way if it was produced rather than being demoed. So he put up the money, we went into the studio, recorded three tracks, and I got a recording contract from that.
Great. Now, what about Peter Gabriel? How has his music influenced you?
I think anything you like influences you. And I do like his music. I think he's very clever, he's brilliant. And I think he's one of the few people who is trying to do something interesting with contemporary music.
Okay, what do you mean by that? By interesting, different? I didn't say different, but just interesting.
Well, I think it's both, and I don't think there's much of that happening. For me, the Floyd were doing something very interesting, especially with the Wall. Talking Heads were doing something very interesting. I think David Bowie certainly was, as was Roxy Music way back in the 70s. In fact, they set a kind of formula that people are still copying and getting away with now. I mean, so many people sound like Brian Ferry, so many people look or sound like David Bowie. And I think it's these kind of original stamps that create an incredible amount of imitations, but it's still these people who leave the mark and who are doing something really interesting.
Well, you sang with Peter Gabriel, right?
Say again?
You sang with Peter Gabriel?
Yes.
Could you tell us about that?
I was really delighted to be asked to do something, and it was a lot of fun.
What was the song, and you know, what do you think of the song?
I thought it was a great song. I think that album that Peter did was one of those albums that actually set a mark in a point in time. And I think it was well appreciated, which is good. I think another album like that was David Byrne and Nino's Life in a Bush of Ghosts. I don't know how popular that was here, but it didn't really get that much attention in our country, and I think that left a very big mark on popular music, particularly when you look at the charts at the moment. The things that are happening again in our country are so derivative of that album.
No, that's sort of an album that a lot of people in music, really follow music, listen to a lot, so it definitely got a lot of attention. It wasn't like a top 100 album or anything,
no.
But it really had its audience. I mean, what have you been able to do since you started using the Fairlight that you couldn't do before?
It gives me much more control over arrangements, particularly, and it affects so many different areas. As soon as I start writing now, I'm working with a sound that is sparking off a particular atmosphere. When you sit down and write at the piano, the sound of the piano is not as different as brass and strings, etc. And I think it really affects the whole flavour of the song. Like the difference between writing on a piano and a guitar that may be amplified by 100 times because of all the different sounds that you have.
What songs in the album did you write on the Fairlight, and you know, what did you write on the piano?
There were very few tracks on this album that I wrote on the piano. Running Up That Hill, Hands of Love, Watching You Without Me, but most of them were Fairlight based. Cloudbusting I wrote on the Fairlight, and I just thought it would be much more interesting with real strings, so we transcribed the Fairlight arrangement for a string players to read, and then they redid it.
There are other people using Fairlight now too, right? Like Simple Minds and Thomas Dolby. Have you heard their records?
I've heard some of Simple Minds stuff, yes. I think the Fairlight is one of those instruments that is definitely in there now. When it first came out, it was so expensive that I think it prohibited people from getting close to it, getting to know it. But it seems to have conquered that barrier now, and it's available in studios at least, and people can get to use it, and I think it will be on so many things from now on.
We're going to change the subject now. I mean, do you see a connection between mysticism and science?
I don't know. I'm sure there is. I think there's a connection between everything. I think everything is linked up somehow. You've just got to find where they meet.
Do you consider yourself a religious person?
That's a question that I get asked a lot, and some people come in, they're so convinced that I'm of a particular order. And I think everyone has something in them that is seeking some kind of religion. But whether I call myself a religious person, I don't think so, no. But I think I'm fascinated by religious imagery. I think most people are, and it's one of those things that has an incredibly extreme effect on people, and that, from a writer's point of view, is fascinating.
Are there any writers who have really influenced you a lot, like, you know, print writers like Bob Gurdjieff or anyone like that, that you want to talk about?
I don't know if there are any writers that have really influenced me. Particular books certainly have. But again, they're much more on a novel level rather than a reality level.
Well, let's have a couple of examples.
I used to read quite a lot of Kurt Vonnegut and C.S. Lewis when I was a kid was one of my biggest ones. I also think when you're very little, like I don't know if you ever read fairy stories by your mother, I think those kind of things get in very, very deep. And when I was really little, one of my favourite writers was Oscar Wilde and his fairy stories. And I actually think they got in quite deep. I think his sense of tragedy and poetry is something that still moves me very much.
Bruce, I didn't know he had fairy stories.
Yes, he does indeed.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, and they're beautiful.
Oh, can you describe one?
Well, one of them... excuse me. Let me... I'm just trying to think what it's called, I don't know. Oh, yeah. The Happy Prince is one of his stories. It's about this huge statue that stands in the middle of a city, and it's incredibly beautiful. It's coated in gold, his eyes are ruby. He just sparkles. He's a beautiful statue of the prince. And there's a little swallow who's flown in and nests at the feet of the statue overlooking the city. And the statue speaks to the swallow and says, does he realise how much poverty and sadness is going on in the city? So bit by bit, the little swallow strips the statue of the gold and the rubies and distributes it around the city to all the poor people. So eventually the prince is just like a lead blob. His eyes are taken, so he's blind. And he's just left completely alone. All his great finery has gone to the poor. And it's winter, and the swallow should really migrate, or it will die. And the swallow will not leave him. And the tragedy is the closeness between them, that the swallow should go or it will die, and how beautiful he was, and now he's completely stripped, and the little swallow dies, and eventually they just sort of pull the statue down and stick him in the dump. But the way that it's written, and it's so beautiful and so sad. And there was one, you know, at the point where the swallow was discovered, I always used to cry as a child.
So you like to write songs like that, then, that are sort of like so archetypal in a way?
I think his sense of tragedy and telling a story attracts me tremendously, and I think it's very similar in a way to a lot of the traditional music that I was again influenced by when I was very little, by my family. My brothers were really into folk music, and a lot of folk music is so into telling stories. And it's, in a way, something that doesn't feature so much in contemporary music anymore. I think contemporary music is used to help relationships a lot of the time. Like, you know, you go to the disco and you meet someone, so you have a song and it's your song. And it's more about that than actually telling stories like the traditional things are. And I think that's a big fascination for me.
Well, is this a recent thing? Like, on your last couple of albums, I noticed a lot more... like jigs and stuff and folk instrumentation. Is this the direction that you're going in more?
I think I've always been really influenced by it, but I haven't been able to express it through my songs. It's weird trying to talk about the process of writing, but it does actually take over you, and you don't have control over it beyond a certain point. And it's only really, I suppose, the last couple of albums where I feel I've had enough control over the process to be able to express the influences that are in there. And particularly the Irish one. I wanted to work with Irish musicians and the pipes and fiddles for a long time, but haven't really had anywhere in my music for them.
Could you talk about your brothers a bit and how they've affected you in your being a creative person, not just like in the sounds that have come out on the album?
We're a very close family. And they're my friends. My parents, as well as my brothers, are friends. And I think they're a very creative family. And I think being brought up in a situation where music is there, people are being creative, it feels natural for you to do that too. So I think that was a very big opening for me at a very young age, to have that kind of energy around me, and in fact the energy that I'm in now. And I think they have been a very big influence on me. When I was very little, it was their music that I used to listen to before I got my own record player and then could play my own music. And I think older brothers, sisters can't help but be an incredible influence.
So So look, when you were younger, you were much like closer with your family than with people outside. I mean, were you a shy person to people outside your family?
Yes, I think so. I think I'm still quite shy. It depends on the situation, but I can be very shy with people. But I think it just depends on the situation and the person.
Okay. So do you feel you're a reclusive person or a social person?
I think I'm really fighting between the two. I think there's a side of me that really loves being social and really loves being with people. And there's another side of me that doesn't, that finds, for instance, most of my creative work I couldn't do with people around. I couldn't write a song with someone else in the same room. It's a very private process for me. I think I've probably got a bit better about it. I mean, when I first used to start writing, even if someone walked in, it would just completely blow my concentration. And at least now I can keep it going, maybe if there's one person in the room. But yes, I think there's a strange struggle in there between those two areas for me.
What records did you like when you were younger? Like when you said, you know, until I got my own record player and had my own music. And
yes.
What was that?
Well, I used to listen to a lot of singles that my brothers had bought that, you know, weren't out when I was there. Songs from the early 60s that actually I wouldn't have heard had it not been for their collection. And I suppose I started buying all the singles that were out. I was very single-orientated.
Like all
the hits.
Yeah, like any that you can remember that you still have now?
Well, one of the first records I ever bought was called They're Coming to Take Me Away, Haha, by Napoleon the 14th. I thought that was great. I thought it was really interesting. I suppose it was one of the first rap records, really. And I think the first album I bought was Bridge Over Troubled Water. I liked the songs on that. And I think, again, that's been a big attraction for me. I'm sure stimulated by traditional music. The thing of the structure of songs and having a story, it does attract me.
Right, now you're saying there's 2 minutes left on this tape, mm-hmm. or what? So maybe we
should... Off the dog's out there.
Good. Well, what's it look like?
Your name's right there. Change.
Well, we won't jump cut too much.
Okay.
That'll look weird if we jump cut. Yeah. That place would be dark in the back. It would drive people crazy. I sort of like that, though.
It could have completely different weather in every scene.
Yeah.
It would be great.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. We should sometime. You could probably do that with filters
yeah.
or something.
Yeah. Have it snowing.
You could just do it in the studio.
In brilliant sunshine.
That's great.
It'd be really good, wouldn't it?
That's great. Sat in your lab, like, could you... That seems to be that, like, knowledge and not getting it or not knowing that you've got it. I mean, is that...
Yeah, it is. Search for knowledge. And I suppose the thing of people who...
Okay, well, could you say sat in your lab, but that's about the search for knowledge. It's just something like that.
Uh-huh.
See the title and then what's
that? Yeah. Yeah, sat in your lab, it's very much a search for knowledge. And about the kind of people who really want to have knowledge but can't be bothered to do the things that they should in order to get it. So they're sitting there saying how nice it would be to have this or to do that without even really desiring to do the things it takes you to get it. And also the whole thing of the more you learn, the more ignorant you realise you are, and that you get over one wall to find an even bigger one.
How about the video? Is that like on? Is that on ice? The video or what?
No, it's roller skates.
Uh-huh.
That was a lot of fun. I don't think we felt it was a serious video. You know, it's meant to be fun, and we thought the roller skates needed an airing.
Okay, how about Suspended in Gaffa? Like, what's the song about? And then I'll ask you what the video is about for the song.
Suspended in Gaffa is, I suppose, similar in some ways to Sat in Your Lap. The idea of someone seeking something, wanting something. I was brought up as a Roman Catholic and had the imagery of purgatory and of the idea that when you were taken there, that you would be given a glimpse of God, and then you wouldn't see him again until you were let into heaven. And we were told that in hell it was even worse, because you got to see God, but then you knew that you'd never see him again. And it's sort of using that as the parallel, and the idea of seeing something incredibly beautiful, having a religious experience and such, but not being able to get back there. And it was playing musically with the idea of the verses being sort of real time and someone happily jumping through life, and then you hit the chorus and it's like everything suddenly goes into slow-mo and they're reaching for that thing that they want and they can't get there.
Mm-hmm. And is that the video, you feel a dance interpretation of that?
Well, that video and the one that went with There Goes the Tenor, quite honestly, were rushed. There was very little time to do them. I had to do 3 videos in something like 2 months, and I don't really think that if we'd had more time, that we would have done that.
So what takes the most time for you, like the ideas or the execution?
I'm sorry?
What takes the most time for you? Is it the ideas and, or is it the execution? Like, is it making the video or coming up with what you think is a really good idea?
It does depend on what you're doing. But I think the ideas are probably the most time-consuming thing. Because if you can have as much organised before you go into shooting, then it's going to be that much quicker and that much more efficient.
Okay, and I guess finally, could you just tell us about your one performance in America?
Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, that one.
It was a lot of fun. It was really good. I was asked to come over here by Eric Idle from Monty Python, who was hosting the show. And it was a great honour for me. And a real pleasure to do. Complete madness.
Oh, yeah. What did you do?
I did A Man with a Child in His Eyes and Them Heavy People. That was a while ago now. That was 79.
That's right. That's a long time ago already. What about Wuthering Heights? What inspired you to write that? Sounds like an obvious question, but maybe it's not an obvious answer. I don't know.
I think it is an obvious answer. It was very much the book. The idea of a relationship where even when one of them is dead, you know, they will not leave the other one alone. I found that fascinating. Not unlike the energy behind the Houdini song that we did, where the strength of love, I mean, it's incredibly romantic, but a very nice story, and the sense of how even when she's dead, you know, she has to come back for him. Possessive lady.
Have you ever been in love in that way or that much?
Yes, I think love affects you in a funny way, and I think everyone loves something or someone. So I think everyone understands, at least on some level, the experiences. I wouldn't say I was a terribly possessive or... I mean, I would hate to think that I was like Kathy. But I think everyone certainly has shadows or, you know, little tinges of those things in them.
Okay. I think that's about it. We should probably just shoot like a couple of cutaways, at which point I'll probably think of a few other questions. That's where it always goes.
Okay, great.